From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Fidel Castro died Friday, and the death of the communist revolutionary leaves Cubans and Cuban Americans looking back on his past and wondering about Cuba's future. Coming up, we speak with members of Southwest Florida's Cuban community about why many are celebrating what they call the death of a tyrant, while others wonder what Castro's death means for the future of Cuba. Plus, craft beer is everywhere today, but less than a decade ago, you'd be hard-pressed to find a locally brewed beer on the shelves of Southwest Florida stores. Coming up, a conversation with local brewing pioneers who helped bring the craft beer revolution to our part of Florida. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. For years, beer in the United States was defined as light lagers, the mild yellow beer on tap virtually everywhere. But increasingly, craft beer, like hoppy India pale ales or spiced Belgian ales, can be found on draft, on the shelf, and increasingly in tasting rooms right next to where they were made at local breweries. Coming up, we'll talk with Southwest Florida brewers who are part of the nationwide movement to break the brewing rules and reinvent beer with new flavors and ingredients. But first, Fidel Castro died Friday. He was 90 years old. The Cuban revolutionary was the prime minister and president of communist Cuba for nearly 50 years. His decades in power brought reforms in education and healthcare, but those years were also marked by international incidents like 1962's Cuban Missile Crisis and many violations of human rights, suppressing dissidents, killing people who disagreed with his reforms, or for trying to leave the island nation. He nationalized private property, taking businesses, farms, and more from citizens in the name of creating a communist utopia. Many Cubans chose to take the risk of leaving and made a home in Florida. Today, we're talking with some of our Cuban neighbors about what this historic moment means to them. Our guests today from Southwest Florida's Cuban-American community are Rafael Lopez, who left Cuba when he was just 5 years old. A veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps, he lived most of his life on Florida's Atlantic coast, where he worked for more than 30 years as a law enforcement officer. He now works with the nonpartisan Hispanic Vote PAC, focusing on local elections and engaging Hispanic and Latino voters. Also joining us today is Gloria Jordan, who left Cuba at the age of 18. She's been a local restaurateur here in Southwest Florida since 2005 and has recently been taking groups of people on tours that are personalized, kind of like culinary tours, of her native Cuba. Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks.
What does the death of Fidel Castro mean to you? Call in and share your thoughts at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Or share on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and Twitter at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCO. I've been reading stories about people in their 80s and 90s driving into Miami from all over Florida because they want to be part of celebrating the death of Fidel Castro. They wanted to be with fellow Cubans in the streets of Little Havana, and they wanted to be with people who understood why Castro's death is something to be celebrated. Rafael, can you help us understand why this is something to be celebrated? Who is this Castro that these older people are remembering?
Well, you have to put yourself in my parents' shoes. I came when I was 5 years old, so I remember very little about Cuba. I have maybe one or two minimal memories of when I was 5 years old of my father. My father died in Cuba. These individuals that came over, these 80-year-olds and 60-year-olds, the generation that came, they were maybe in their 40s and 30s when I was five. These individuals, even though they know that Cuba would not change with the death of Castro, they felt a symbolic that Castro died. You know, so they want to be around other people that feel the way they do. I can tell you I have a lot of friends of mine that were never born in Cuba. They were born here, but their parents were Cubans. And they drove from Broward and Palm Beach County to be in Dade County. They wanted to go – they wanted to be in front of La Carreta restaurant. They wanted to be in front of Versailles. They wanted to hold the American flag, the Cuban flag. They wanted to just express and be around people of their own nationality because – if they weren't doing it for themselves, they were doing it for their parents or their grandparents. I fortunately didn't go, but I was on social media all day. I don't think I slept that day because I was on Facebook or LinkedIn or on the phone or texting, talking to a lot of people. Having said that, you know, the death of Fidel Castro is a bittersweet pill for me, because even though I feel that it's symbolic and I'm hoping for some kind of change in Cuba, it's really sad for me, because all it really brought when Fidel died was it brought a lot of memories of my family and that we had to leave Cuba and all the negative things that came out of Fidel's regime for the last 50 years.
Which is, I think, something that a lot of people that are not from Cuba and maybe are not from Florida may not really understand those kinds of stories and that kind of feeling.
Correct. And that's when you look at if you don't live in Southwest Florida, or I mean Southeast Florida, a little bit in Southwest Florida, but if you're not in South Florida and you don't have family or you don't have friends that are Cuban Americans, it's going to be hard for your regular American to understand what is happening in Cuba. It's even hard for me to explain, and I'm Cuban born, but it's one of those things that if you don't know and you haven't been there and you don't have friends or family from Cuba, it would be very hard for the rest of the United States to understand what's the big deal in Cuba. Why are they making such a big deal about this?
But he kind of symbolized something, and he was the perpetrator of a lot of things. And I want to talk to you, Gloria. You were there and lived there until you were 18 years old. Mm-hmm. That's a very different childhood from what I experienced. You grew up under a communist dictator.
Of course.
What was that like? I mean, how can you describe that to people?
Well, you cannot describe that. I still go in every month, and I'm looking around, and I said, this doesn't make sense. I mean, it's the whole city is destroyed for no reason. Actually, he was very honest like 6 months ago, and I think that's when he started kind of losing his mind a little bit. He actually told the world the revolution, it was a fail. He failed the revolution. Every country, you know, that they used to be part of the, you know, the Soviet Union and all those countries, they were the one that maintained his freshest ideas and all that, you know. We would exchange for sugar, and then we had everything. We thought that we had everything, but we didn't. We know there was something way more. But, of course, we don't have no access to anything. Still, this day, I would say 10% of the country have access to internet. So how did we know it's something else? I always knew.
You didn't know what was going on outside of your island?
No, of course not. We would see in black and white. We never see colors. Actually, we still have it's not anymore, but up to my good 15, people would still have black and white TVs at home, just to give you an idea.
You were 15, saw a black and white
15.
TV.
Absolutely. They were Russian TV, so we thought everything that would get into the news was related to the socialist communist country. So, of course, we didn't know there was something better. Not until the 80s, when the Cubans finally left. Or some generation before, they started, we didn't have no communication with family. My father, I remember, he didn't know anything about his brother for 30 years. So once in a blue, when that letter came to through a third country or something, we were like, oh, my God, what is this? We were
so you would actually get a post that came through another country to come to you so you could hear word from
exactly.
a relative.
And it was very restricted. I mean, like, very restricted. So we didn't know. We didn't know. Then still people don't know. It's a different world out there.
They're still very, like,
of
sheltered,
course, especially
basically.
The country. People that live in the country, they mostly don't even have a TV, some of them. And I'm not going to say, you know, I won't like participate for what happened right now. I'm not happy. I'm not sad. I feel nothing. I had NBC that came and did an interview in my restaurant the day of Castro's death. I woke up in the morning, and my husband said, wake up. This is a big news for you. And I was just like, auntie, we've been waiting for that so long, and now it happened? Big deal. The brother is still in charge. And they will never give up that dynasty. I know that. I go to Cuba every month. My family is there. My mother is there. My brother is there. He's a very smart person. He read the paper, even with it's that paper. They won't give up.
It's a state-controlled paper, I'm imagining.
Of course. Everything is controlled by the government. Everything. I mean, when I said everything. He finally gave a little break to small business. Cubans are I'm so proud to be Cuba. Just let me say that. Because I go there every month, and what I see, I go shocked. I mean, I didn't shock. I mean, like, what people provide for the tourists right now is just amazing. The chef would come out with things that I said, how did they can do this with nothing? Basically with nothing. Everything is just no GMO, so the food, it tastes amazing. Then you go into the little B&B, and then you see artists working with the people that own the houses. It's just like a very a small revolution started. I hope.
Maybe they're waking up, you mean?
They have to.
Having been.
They have to because they don't have no choice. It's no money in Cuba. And then no country want to do business with them, or only hotels, and they don't pay. We don't have that money that you can exchange on the, you know, how do you say, the...
International exchange.
International exchange, exactly.
Well, just remember what she's saying here, and I understand exactly what she's saying. This is the big debate over the embargo.
Yeah.
And what's happened is that every country that Cuba has dealt with, they've stiffed.
Yes.
So basically, they owe all these other countries.
Right. A lot.
The only country that had not been ripped off by the Cuban government is the U.S. taxpayer because there's an embargo.
Right.
Well, if there was an embargo, they would deal with us and then they would rip us off.
I don't believe it's an embargo. I really don't. If it's an embargo, and I've been reading about the embargo, that were, when I left Cuba and I said, that's BS. Because if it would be embargo, U.S. it would say, no one can do business in Cuba. And it's a lot of people in Cuba. It's the French, it's the Italians, it's Spanish, Mexicans owns the most amazing resorts, and then Mexican building, but Cubans is responsible for
day-to-day operations.
Yes, exactly. They pay them nothing. And they're working hard. I mean, we had Canadians. Like, the big, big tourists right now in Cuba is Canadians. And those hotels are full year-round. Now it's a trend. Now, kind of, like, everybody can go to Cuba. But I would say to everybody, make sure you have the right paper to go to Cuba. Not to, a couple weeks ago, they returned 7 Americans because they didn't have the right papers with them. Hmm. So it's bad information out there. Can we go or can we go? You know, it's nothing. Nobody hasn't said, very confusing. If you go to the government website, you have to qualify for one of those, right? But Canadians and everybody is there. They're there. So we said, this is stupid. What embargo? What's the excuse they're going to do now? Okay, I would say, take the embargo off. I want to see what the excuse they're going to tell the country, okay? Why we so behind? Why support? What is no food? What is it? I want to see that. It's not embargo, I'm telling you. It's Coca-Cola there. We have Western Union. So it's an embargo? You get Coca-Cola through other countries, but it's Coca-Cola. Western Union, American Airlines, flying every day. So it's an embargo, really?
So do you feel like there's kind of, I mean, I'm going to ask you, Rafael, also, do you feel like there's a corruption or an attitude that in spite of Fidel Castro's passing, do you feel nothing in that same way that everything's just going to continue to go the same way it's been going? Or do you feel that there might be hope with the people like you're describing who are having their own smaller internal revolution and the pride in the individual people?
Well, I have to, I have to have some kind of hope that with the passing of Fidel and hopefully with Raul supposedly retiring in 2 years, that you know, they already have someone else, and I forgot the gentleman's name, but they already have somebody else ready to take their place. And I can imagine that person's not going to want to give it up either.
Right.
But the point is you want to have hope. But like her, I felt that, and she described it pretty well, that when Castro died, at first I wanted to feel happy about it. But after a while, all my friends were texting me, they were calling me, and I didn't feel anything.
Right.
I felt just like, you know, so he died. You know, nothing's going to change.
Exactly.
I kind of felt for my what the only good feelings that I got that day is when I thought of my parents. And obviously, you know, I have good thoughts of my parents. So I thought about that stuff. But those thoughts always went back to that, you know, listen, I left when I was 5 years old. It was my two brothers. I was the youngest of three brothers and my mother. And my father was I believe he was an executive with the Cuban Electric Company.
Mm-hmm.
He was not allowed to leave, you know, for whatever political reasons. So I know that my brother was, I want to say 11 at the time, and I apologize, I'm going by memory. He was about 11, and I remember that one of the reasons that we left is because he was at that age where they started recruiting the young men and women to basically indoctrinate the young men and women into communism. So that's when my father said, look, take the boys and go to Cuba. You have to remember in those days in the 60s, no one believed that this was going to go on for 50 years. Everybody thought, you know, it'll be a couple of years and then it'll be over. Just go to Miami. In a couple of years, this will, you know, I'll stay here. We'll.
I don't think anybody thought it was going to last that long.
No, no. You know, and you know, everybody forgets about the forgotten war, they call it, where, right. You know, from 1960 to, I believe, 66 or 67, you know, the actual war really happened then, not 1959. That was easy. Getting rid of Batista was really not that hard, especially when actually Fidel was backed by the U.S. I think what happened was that Fidel is a con man. Fidel conned everybody. Fidel conned the Cuban people to the point that the minute Fidel took over, and correct me if I'm wrong, if, you know, the minute Fidel took over, he not only assassinated people that were against him, but he also assassinated his co-revolutionaries that helped him overthrow Batista, because at that point, once Fidel said, I'm communist, and we're going to follow the communist doctrine, these individuals who at the time, you have to remember too that in 1959, it was supposed to be a democratic revolution to get rid of a dictator, but then create a democratic form of government, you know, free elections and all that. None of that happened. Fidel with Che Guevara and all that, they took over and they started assassinating people, including their own fellow Cubans who had helped them overthrow Batista, because they didn't agree with, hey, well, that's not what you said. And at the time, the U.S. government was also backing they were called the Fidelistas at that time. But then once all that happened, they backed off. And then Castro united with Russia and the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, it's a history that I think a lot of people in our area may be more familiar with than in other parts of the United States.
Correct.
And I wanted to throw out, if you'd like to be part of this conversation today, you can give us a call at 877-428-8255 or 877-GCU-TALK. You can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or you can contact us via Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. And we're talking about the passing of Fidel Castro. And like you said, it's really rare to have a figure like Fidel Castro dominate a country for as long as he did. And like you said, nobody really expected that. For better or worse, he had a profound influence on Cubans, both on the island and elsewhere. Cuban-American writer Ake Abejas talked with NPR's David Green today on Morning Edition. And we'll take a listen real quick to what she had to say.
Those of us who have spent our entire lives with Fidel as a powerful backdrop, let's say, have in some ways absorbed some of his, you know, if not attitudes, sometimes peculiarities or affects. For example, my dad used to point in the air in the exact same way as Fidel. Fidel had a very particular way of using his index finger to sort of jab the air. And you know, I go to Miami, I hang out with my relatives, and all the men of his generation are doing that. They're pointing, and, you know, and it's not a natural thing. It's like we've picked it up, you know. So the imperiousness that sometimes afflicts us becomes the little Fidel in us.
So how do you respond to that? First of all, do you know of this gesture?
It's very true.
Yes.
Very familiar.
Most people tell me, well, you always talk with your hands. And it's not an Italian thing because I don't have an Italian background. But is this that, you know, we've been training basically since when we were kids. We were separated from the family at the age of 5. And then he would come and did a beautiful, that point, you know, we think it was beautiful. We had to adore the man. We had to respect the man. We had to obey the man. We still have to obey.
As a young girl,
we have to go and those leagues of pioneros. What that means, you have to join, and you like it or you don't. Except they were respected for you were religious, but then you were also very discriminated as well. So then you had to join on the pioneros league. Then he would come to you at the age of 5. I was 5 years old when I was removed from my family for 45 days to a campament where he would come and talk to you and start basically washing your brain.
Brainwash.
And they will explain to you what in a beautiful word what a communist is. They will discuss. At the age of 5, we already started studying Marx and Engels and Lenin. So it's
Marching Angels?
Yes.
Is that, it was called Marching Angels.
Maybe the accent.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, Vladimir Ilyich Lenin and Marx and Engel, what they were the pioneers of communists, basically. Mm-hmm. They rebook, so we get all those pamphlets in Cuba. And at the age of five, we already started following his ideas and falling in love with
finger
ideas.
Point.
With the finger point. And that passionate about, you know, oh, we are communists. We are proud to be pioneers, you know, like little kids doing that. I mean, up to this day, it's Shane. I have a niece and nephew in there. I always asking, and they never say much what they think because that's the way we grew up. You are afraid to expose your feelings, your real feelings. And I go there every month, and I talk in a room like this, and I talk to my niece and nephew, and they never give me the right answer. And I said, it's okay. I was that kid, too.
But they don't feel like they can be honest?
No. It's a way they train you, you know, to have fears even with your family. So that's something that I would never forget.
Well, that's hard to go back and see that continues. And then
it does continue.
They
don't talk about it.
But it's been how long since Fidel Castro gave up power, correct?
And almost 10 years, yeah.
So then, but still, and like
you
said.
But you still have the regime there, don't
exactly,
forget.
Exactly, yes. And he's still, he was still until basically, as far as I know, not even a year ago, he started writing every day for the news press, what we call the news press, a grammar. And then he goes to the Mesa Redondas, where he was still at the age of 89, we still have his strong opinion and condemn Americans badly. Like he pointing the, all are we being becoming rebels, but we're still, we're rebels, but we're not fighters. Because if we would have been fighters, we wouldn't be there for 50 years. Okay? Of course, we didn't have help from anyone. It's easy to go in and say, oh, Cuba, Cuba, but who really helped Cuba? He owns the army. He owns everything. He owns us. Mm-hmm. So how do you can fight if you don't have guns?
Well,
you know?
And we have a question from a caller that I wanted to have you guys talk with. This is Ralph, and he is from Naples. And he would like to ask a question. Ralph, what do you have?
My question is, I'm an Anglo-American, just moved to Florida about 20 years ago from Ohio. And until I moved to Florida, I had no Cuban friends, but I have Cuban friends and neighbors. I've always been confused. Which was the worst tyrant, Batista or Castro? Batista ran a corrupt government influenced by Americans and the mafia, and Castro ran a corrupt government. Which one did the best for the people?
That's a good question.
Well, it is a good question, but you got to remember Batista was only there a few years.
Right.
So, and Batista was you know, he was kind of like a capitalist dictator.
Yeah.
So he kind of did things, you know, he was corrupt.
He was a dictator too,
yeah. But he was a dictator, yeah, he was. And that's why that democratic revolution in 59 was to get rid of Batista, unbeknownst to everyone that Castro was really conning everyone.
Mm-hmm. But one thing about Batista, Cubans have food by then, okay?
Well,
it always was food available. My mother actually sympathized with Castro, and she said, don't forget that your generation is different than my generation. And she explained why. When Batista, my grandfather, they were coming from, my father came from a very wealthy family, but not my mother. So she would live in the country, and Batista would take his guys and said, come on, get out of here. This is my land. And they were nine brothers and sisters, so they had to get on the road, and my grandmother pregnant again, then my grandfather, and a horse, put in three of things that they owned, and they keep going to another piece of land with another guajiro, what we call a farmer, and we said, come here and camping right by me. So Batista, it was just as bad. But my mother said also, we have to remember the food was always available. The Cubans don't have no food. I have a neighbor who died. You know what she was saying in her last word? I want a little bit of milk. And that was her last words. Okay? So think about it. It's a good question. They both were dictators, and they both, in a different way, and they both corrupted. Absolutely.
But Castro had more time damage.
But again, he promised he never provided.
Right. You have to remember, the main thing that people forget is that revolution in 1959 was not a communist revolution. It wasn't Fidel Castro trying to take over the country to become a communist country. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of other Cubans in that fight that wanted a democracy, that they wanted to have free elections.
Right.
And that's what Castro had promised. And when once he took over, like I said, he assassinated these individuals, including his fellow revolutionaries that helped him get rid of Batista.
Of mm-hmm. course, that I learned about that when I get out of Cuba, because you never heard that side of the story. Only in an AM, like, you know, little radio station from Miami, the back in the 80s, we were still getting in a, I don't know what you call it, AM radio.
Oh,
so we were trying to
radio?
Listen. Of course, people listen to that every day, Radio Martí, Radio Mambí. So that's the only way we will listen to all the side of the story. So then we know, who is that? Uber Matos. Oh, my God, who is that? So we will go back on the history. Of course, they never mentioned those names. Until I get out of Cuba, then I start knowing about and read more about that those people. That they were revolutionaries, too. That they came with him and trying to do a better, you know, better situation. You know, kill Batista or whatever, you know, get rid of Batista from the government. But they ended, figured out that what Castro wanted, power. And that's all what he cared for.
And he also, I'm telling you, he also conned the U.S. government because the CIA and all the people, the State Department in Cuba,
yes,
were all Fidelista. They wanted that revolution to take hold because they wanted Cuba to be a Democrat.
Yeah, because it was branded as a democracy.
Exactly.
Well, what he sold to the world was that. If you read what he said in the beginning, oh my God, wonderful. My father used to sympathize, and he said, told the family, you go, I stay here. I know this is going to change. This is going to be temporary.
That's what happened with my father.
And that never happened. Mm-hmm. My father died waiting for any change, you know? But I changed his life because I'm here. And
you changed your life because you left.
Exactly.
At 18.
But his life, it didn't change. You know, he was really waiting for take over, you know, took again all his family business. They had sugar mills. They have sugar plantation. They lost everything, you know?
Yeah.
What you have to remember, too, is to understand how bad it is in Cuba now, you have to really understand how good it was before Batista.
Yeah.
Even during Batista, but how great it was because – I wasn't there, but I have a lot of friends that are Cubans that you know, in Miami and Broward County where I came from and here. And they would tell you about Cuba. And one of the things an old friend of mine who owns a meat market in Broward County, he would always tell me – he said, Rafael, he says, when you – in the 40s and 50s, when you talked about the United States, England, France – Italy, you spoke about Cuba. Mm-hmm. When you talked about New York, San Francisco, London, Paris, Rome, you spoke about La Habana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The doctors, whether it was medicine,
everybody,
whether it was art, music, you know, just economy. The Constitution of Cuba in the 40s had women voting. The first in Latin America had it was against the law to discriminate reference race. There's a lot of stuff. If I'd have brought some more notes, I would have. I can tell you so
much.
Well,
we could talk for a long time.
Yes.
And I mean, hear some of the music coming in our headphones telling us.
But Cuba in the 40s and 50s up to 1959 wasn't a third world country.
Exactly.
It was a democracy, and it was the Cubans were hardworking people, and they were actually, I believe it was in the early 50s where the UN even called Cuba one of the most one of the most advanced countries in Latin America.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Americans used to go to Havana, not Puerto Rico or Dominican.
Well, there's one stat I do remember is that in 1957, 58, there were more Americans living in Cuba than there were Cubans living in America.
Oh, wow. Well, okay, that's all the time we have. I would love to talk about this mm-hmm. for a long time, but that's all we have time for on this segment. I really want to thank you guys both.
I just made a new friend.
Yes.
Well, that's the Cuban way, right?
Exactly.
Be friends. All right. Well, let's look forward with some hope also.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you both for coming in. Up next, we have exactly 500 years since Germany's beer purity laws defined beer, saying that it can only be made with water, hops, and barley. And those ingredients defined the world of beer for centuries. We're going to look at how it is now right here in Southwest Florida when we come back. You're listening to WGCU.